Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for September the 10th, 2018. This is David Corey. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, good evening, David, and good evening, everyone. Tonight we have two major segments in the first show. First, we will hear from veterans talk about their military service and returning to civilian life, which we know can be a very distressful and very hardship on them. Then in the second segment, we will have news of interest to veterans. But first, I'd like to acknowledge two sponsors of our show, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, whose financial contribution helps us to provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. Joyce and Joe, if you're listening, thank you as always. We also wish to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Remember, this is a call-in show. We'd love to hear from you veterans, families, family members of veterans. If you have any questions regarding anything that we discussed tonight, or maybe you have something that you want to share with other veterans around the country. So please, again, call us at 1-888-627-6008. Now over to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. For our first segment of the show tonight, we're going to hear from four veterans who tell their experiences in war and afterwards as they return to civilian life. These interviews are courtesy of the VA's Make the Connection series available on YouTube, in which the VA encourages people to share. The first veteran we will hear from is a Marine named Sam. He served in Afghanistan, and after he returned home, anxiety and a lot of anger led to the end of a relationship. When he decided to reach out for mental health care, he learned the real value of finding the right counselor to help him. Opening up about his challenges helped him feel better again, and it'd be important insights for all of us. So, Doug, if you'll please roll this first tape.
My name is Sam. I was in the Marines from 2008 to 2012. I was a 0352. It's a tow gunner, and I was also a 0311 as a scout. My first deployment was at 19 to Afghanistan. After the first deployment, everything's so surreal. When we lost our first guy, and then the second and third, and then you start seeing the suicides happening, you kind of have to experience it for yourself to realize that it's real. There was no pathway. You kind of get out, and that's it, and you got to really figure out what you want to do. One day you're totally fine with what you're doing and the choices you're making. The next day you're not. You're watching all your buddies going through the same thing, and it seems like everyone's kind of lost. It's that mix of like depression, anxiety, anger, the unwillingness to kind of keep going. It's that mix of emotions that really takes effect. But yeah, it got to a point with the anxiety and anger that it was just getting worse. When I first started going and seeking help, it was after my first relationship ended. I forced myself to be kind of more angry at the fact that everything happened the way it did, instead of trying to work through it or evaluate it in some sort of way. So it was definitely a very low point, and that's pretty much when I decided to go start talking to someone. I was going to school to be a firefighter, so I was just getting a physical and went over to mental health, and I had to get an appointment there as well. I knew that there was an outreach center right down the road from where I live, so they just set me up an appointment there. I mean, the good thing about the outreach centers is you don't really need a a referral or anything. I mean, you can just walk in, set something up, or just ask to talk to someone, but you have to seek it. I sat down with the director of that outreach center and just asked, you know, pretty general questions, anything you would get at a normal job or going really anywhere, just basic info. And then he just went through the process of, like, we have a team here, you can talk with someone. If you don't feel that you're connecting with them, you can, you know, go to whoever else you're comfortable with. I started out doing it once every 2 weeks, and I was working part-time and going to school full-time, so I started doing it once a month. I think it was just talking about what you were going through and then hearing what they had to say, kind of from a third party that really has no idea about your life or who you really are. I think that's what helped the most, and still does. What I've realized is that sense of purpose you can take and place in a variety of ways. I teach at a fire academy, and being able to give that mentorship or that guidance to people coming through, that's what helps me the most. When it comes to getting help, they're not going to knock on your door. So you have to make that step or do that walk-in.
Well, thanks to Sam for sharing his experience with us. One thing that really struck me was when he said, you know, these veterans need to find their sense of purpose. When the service members are serving on active duty and they're really focused on what the mission is, whatever the mission of their unit is, and it gives them a sense of purpose and the sense of being part of a team and all the support that goes with that is so important. And a lot of veterans have difficulty adjusting back to civilian life when they've lost that sense of purpose, support of a team, and meanwhile they're struggling with post-traumatic stress, anxiety, anger, depression issues. So as Sam said, it's important to reach out. There are a lot of resources in the VA. There are the vet centers. There are, you know, VA counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists. There are a lot of organizations that can help. We've had some of those organizations on our show in the past, Vets Helping Vets and others, where there's a lot of peer counseling. It's so important. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, you pretty much said it all. Unfortunately, I think from what I really see in the trenches, that the VA really doesn't provide the assistance that these veterans need, and they're forced to go outside to other resources. And like you said, there are a lot out there. Unfortunately, the veteran has to find them. And, you know, shows like us can promote them, and maybe there's other shows out there, but it's very difficult for veterans. And that's why I think it's very important for family members to kind of, you know, step up and assist their veteran. You know, if you hear of something that, you know, pops up, you know, make sure you write it down and get in touch with your family member who's a veteran and just say, hey, look, you need to call these people. Or, you know, because, you know, it's very hard. And, you know, the other thing about veterans is they don't initiate. You know, and I may be generalizing, but from what I'm seeing over the last 6 years in representing vets, they tend not to initiate a lot of things on their behalf. And, you know, one of my opinions about that is that they're so beat up about the process and what has happened to them since they've been veterans that they give up. And whether it's filing a claim on their own behalf, you know, I mean, I know a lot of veterans will refer David, you and I, to other veterans, and I'll get a call like in 2 weeks and we'll say, did you hear from John Smith? And I'll say, no. Well, I gave him your card and I told him to call you. And then veteran will reach out for John Smith or see him about 2 weeks later and say, did you call the lawyer? He wants to help you. He can help you. And he goes, I don't know. So that's just one example, of course. But I think it's kind of it's an overall situation that we have to deal with our vets. So please, people, at the end of the show, we're going to give you some phone numbers to write down. Write them down. Help your vet. Back to you, David.
Yep. Well, thank you. I think it is important to emphasize that there are so many resources within the VA, but also organizations, a lot of peer support organizations outside of the VA. So, Richard, do you want to introduce our next veteran?
I'd love to. We will next hear from Army veteran Marie, who served in the Iraq War. She had a rough transition to civilian life. Nightmares made her miserable. When her physical health started to suffer, she reached out for support. Opening up to others during VA group therapy helped Marie turn her life around. Doug, please roll tape number 2.
My name is Marie, and I joined the Army when I was 18 years old. I served from 2000 to 2009. I was deployed for OIF 1 and 2 to Iraq in 2003-2004. We were right at the very beginning of the Iraq War. There wasn't even service routes established. One of the biggest things that happened there was my squad leader was killed. And I looked up to him. I mean, so losing him was crazy. I remember the day it happened. I mean, it was like giant explosion. Everybody scrambling around. And then it was, okay, back to your work. You just kind of pushed it out of your brain at the time because you had so much else going on. You're like, oh, I got to get ready for my next mission. I got to do this, that, and the other thing. So you didn't really even think about it or process it at the time at all. You know, when it really started to creep up on me was after we got home. I'm a very, very social person by nature. And so almost it was like, for me, a survival tactic of coping with life was kind of just always be out and about with people so that I wouldn't think about stuff. And I was doing all this stuff and, there was still this aspect of being really lonely because for the longest time, I mean, I really, really missed my unit and the people that I knew had been through the exact same things as me. And then as the months started going by, then it was like my brain suddenly started remembering all this stuff. The biggest thing I noticed first was nightmares. Just horrible ones, to the point where if I was dreaming that I was in physical pain, I would wake up with that physical pain. And then, yeah, just being very paranoid of loud noises. Mostly I just didn't talk about it to anybody. I just tell them surface stuff, like, oh, this one time there was a really bad sandstorm. Or I talk about the stuff, but nothing... none of the really serious issues. I just got to the point where my insomnia and my nightmares were just slowly killing me and kind of feeling like, oh, there's nothing left for me in the world. Kind of that really dismal mentality. And I started getting really, really sick. I went from being able to run 20 miles, I'm a distance runner, to not even be able to run 2. It was just one day I was like, I'm just going to go down and get registered with the VA, get in the system. For me, what was the most effective was signing up for group therapy. That I actually liked and enjoyed because I could meet up with other vets and who were in massive pain like me. And then I didn't feel like it was just me dealing with my issues. It was, hey, we are all dealing with these issues. I feel like I've been on an uphill swing now for a while, which has been amazing. I am super thankful that I did end up having the willpower to see through it and get the treatment that I needed. Because of that, my physical health has greatly improved, and it's so much easier to manage your illnesses if you're actually willing to confront them and say, yes, I have this, and I need to go find treatment, and I need to figure out what medication works for me, and just do the footwork, no matter how hard it is.
Well, thank you to Marie for sharing her experience. As she said, you know, experienced a lot of traumatic events. Serving in Iraq, came home, and as I had said earlier, you know, making that transition from once being in a unit with a lot of support systems and then being on her own and really kind of spiraling downward. It sounded like from her description that, you know, she was really becoming a lot of despair, depression, and other things. So fortunately, as she said, she found that the VA group therapy was very helpful, kind of turned things around for her. So the important step is the veterans reach out, hear the stories of other veterans, what they went through, and realize that there is a path, you know, kind of back to a sense of normalcy, at least as close as you can. So, Richard, before we go to the next veteran, any thoughts?
Yeah, I have one, and that is, David, if you wouldn't mind, I know you found these sites for all these excerpts from different veterans, and maybe if you could share that toward the end of the show or during the show.
I will.
I think it's a great thing maybe for other veterans to be able to listen to some of these on their own, because it's a form of therapy. You know, it's a form of counseling by being able to listen to other stories and realize that, you know, you're not alone here. And maybe, you know, listening to some of these stories would be a good start. Back to you.
Thank you. Yep. Okay, so the next veteran we will hear from tonight is Bill, who fought in Vietnam. He came back from Vietnam, went back to college. He discovered, though, that, you know, the war had really changed. He was a very different person. He was always on edge. He was angry for what appeared to be no apparent reason. Often found himself going out of control. Years later, when he was in the hospital for an operation, someone suggested that he reach out for help from the VA, and fortunately, that put him on a path where his life is doing a lot better. So, Doug, if you could please roll the third tape.
My name is Bill. I served in the Marine Corps, served in Vietnam. I was in the Marine Corps for 3 years, 9 months, and 20 days. I was in Vietnam from 67 to 68. Certainly killing human beings changes you. I remember the first time I killed two in VA, and that was on the Strip, and I was elated, actually. I didn't smile or laugh or anything, but I was inwardly elated that I finally killed the enemy. And little did I know that now I would be feeling, actually, remorse or sadness. I asked for a college cut to get out of the Marine Corps, and I received it, and I attended Ohio State very briefly, and I couldn't find my mind wrapping around academia. I couldn't concentrate, couldn't study, and I really couldn't focus on the whole thing. And I couldn't understand what was wrong with me, because I felt nervous. I felt I was tapping my feet all the time. I couldn't sit down, and I had to, my head had a swivel on it. I was always watching everybody, and whenever somebody came into a room or something, I was watching them before they saw me. And I couldn't understand why I was like that. Anger was something that I would come from 0 to 60, and fighting, and if I thought somebody was irrational, I became completely irrational, and a lot of fighting and a lot of, I didn't have time for fools, always said to myself, and I thought nobody understood me. I thought I was alone, and really, actually, for the most part, I was alone. After my bypass, I talked to a psychiatrist. He talked to me for about 5 minutes, and he said, Bill, you have PTS. I said, well, how in the hell would you know? I said, you've talked to me 5 minutes and you can diagnose me? And he says, well, I've done this before. So I looked at him and he stared at me right in the eye and he didn't flinch. And I said, well, maybe there's something to this. So he assigned me a psychiatrist, assigned me a therapist, and I started taking therapy sessions and going to groups and talking about this, and I found that, I have all these symptoms by virtue of the PTS, what is called post-traumatic stress. It happens years after you come back from Vietnam. And if you stay busy, you may not think about it for 20 to 30 years, but it's going to come back and bite you right in the you-know-what. I think these young warriors, the OIF and OEF warriors, have a really difficult problem now. They've got so many deployments, but when they come back, they don't have that respite from the war because they have to stay in training. They have to stay in the mode of going back and fight that war. They know they're going back. So they stay in that mode, which severely imprints them as far as combat stress and PTS. And they're not getting the help from the mental health clinicians. They're not getting the help. And hopefully this message here is going to get out and make a difference. I can tell you the VA has stepped up to care for the veterans, and I just hope that the education and the word gets out to these combat veterans, because I had a general one time, General Kelly, who told me, he was the chief of the Special Operation Forces, and he said, Bill, if anybody tells you that they're never changed by war, they're lying. If you are a human being, then war is going to change you. It's going to impact you, and it will change you. Get some help. I don't care if it's at the VA. Hopefully it's at the VA because they have some great programs. Don't listen to your buddy saying the VA is screwed up. They're not that screwed up. You're the one who's screwed up, and you need to go get some help. And if you can't get it yourself, find some veteran as a mentor, so as an advocate for you. For example, American Combat Veterans War. That's what we do, is we guide you through what we call the VA maze. Now, it's not a maze because they want it that way. It's a maze because combat veterans make terrible advocates for themselves. So guide your way in there. If you're a current warrior, you go to the Vet Center. The Vet Center is anonymous in their reports to the VA and to the military. So don't deny that you've got some problems. I mean, you're feeling the way for some reason. You need to ask for help.
Well, that's just awesome insight from Bill. We'd like to thank him for taking the time. And one thing that of many points that impressed me from what he said was kind of noting how the Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, and we're now approaching 17 years of our military forces in Afghanistan, that these service members have often been deployed many times, and as a result they've always had to stay in ready for the next deployment, and they haven't necessarily realized that they're going to need some help. So I think he had some great advice. So, Richard, what are your thoughts? And I know we've got one more veteran after this, so
yeah,
go ahead.
No, I thought Bill was terrific. He reminded me of something I had heard when I was talking to a Canadian veteran, and that is that when Canadians come back from deployment, they stay home for 6 months prior to being redeployed again. And, during that time, they're encouraged to spend time with family, with their children if they have them, but more importantly, to seek whatever counseling that they might need as a result of the previous deployment. That doesn't go on with our military. Our guys are sent, back pretty frequently and within weeks of each other. So that's a problem that we have in our military. And I think Bill was talking about is kind of right on point. So why don't you give us the next segment?
Okay, I will. Thanks. So the fourth veteran And the final one that we'll hear from tonight is another veteran of the Iraq War. He came back from deployment, found life just wasn't the same because he wasn't the same. He was on edge all the time, trouble controlling his temper. Finally, a fellow veteran set him right, and he started getting help from the VA. So, Doug, if you'll roll the fourth tape, please.
When I got home, I was doing pretty good, I thought. I hit the ground running. My third day home, I had already had a full-time job locked on, and I started working every day. I worked actually 3 months before I even took a day off. I stayed real busy, and everything seemed to be going pretty good until I started to have some downtime. I actually got promoted at my job. Didn't have to work 7 days a week. And I think that's when I started noticing a little difference in basically who I was. I was a lot more irritable. I was always tired. I never slept. I actually got pulled over one time for failure to maintain a lane. And it was actually kind of embarrassing to me at the time because the police officer asked, you know, of course he thought I was drunk or inebriated or talking on a cell phone. And I said, no. I said, but what had happened was there was a bag in the road, and I just didn't even think about it. I just assumed it was an ID. I mean, subconsciously, I swerved to miss it. There was a police officer right behind me, flipped the lights. He wanted to know what's going on. And I didn't even tell him that. I just told him, I don't know. I didn't maintain my lane. I didn't want him to think I was crazy. I didn't want him to think, wow, what's the deal with this guy? And then I just noticed that my relationship with everybody, as time went on, it got worse. I was harder to deal with. And I just, you know, it got to the point where I was almost impossible to deal with. I was having trouble at work. I ended up losing a job because I was getting violent. Started another job. Was getting violent there, was real irritable, hard to deal with. And then what was kind of like come to Jesus meeting with me is when a friend of mine that I worked with, his dad came into town, and we were talking about the military and my service, and he was, you know, in the Navy back in the day, and we were talking about that, and he was kind of telling me, do you have any problems? And I said, you know, it's funny, I kind of do. And he was the one that told me, you need to get with the VA, you need to go see somebody, you need to get help. And I was like, nah, you know, I don't need that. And he's like, you do. You really do. I'm telling you now, you do. It's like he knew something that I didn't because he had already been there. Since I've really started getting help, my life isn't perfect by no means. There's no doubt in my mind I'm not the same person that I was before I went to Iraq. It's just I'm not that person anymore. Now, I came to the conclusion I can either throw in the towel and fall to the wayside, or I can get every bit of help that I can and become the best person I can be right now. I'm engaged now. I want the best life for me and her. We have two kids. I want the best life for them. If it's a struggle with me every day, then it's going to be a struggle. All I can do is go get the help I need. We got into an argument one night, and I said, you know, it might really help you understand me and some of the ways I am. If you understood what PTSD, it just might help you understand. You might be a little more sympathetic at times, but you're going to need to know what's possibly going on with me. I wanted her and myself, let's get in front of somebody else, because maybe I am making excuses for myself. Maybe I'm not, but let's get somebody else's opinion other than mine. So she did some research on it, and then she started to get an idea of what it was. And then we went to the vet center in Spring, Texas, and we started talking to somebody out there as a couple. Her being supportive has made a huge difference. And everything's not perfect. It's not, we still have our struggles. But when you're educated to what's going on, it's a lot better. For 3 years when I got home, I didn't want to talk to nobody. I just stayed busy. I blanked it out. But guess what? It doesn't go anywhere. It's there. You're going to run, but you're going to get tired sooner or later, and that problem is going to be there. If you got an opportunity to go talk to somebody, you need to go do it. Anytime you want, you pick up a phone, go to a center, anything, go talk to somebody. Because whatever you're dealing with, you think you're the only one, you think I'm on this island all alone, there's 1,000 more people going through the same thing, and it will benefit you. It will benefit them to talk about it. Hey, this works for me. What works for you? Mix and mingle and figure out what's best. And just realize, you know what? The situation I'm going through, it really isn't cool, but I'm not the only one. I'm not alone. This is really normal. And let's get some help. Let's do this.
Well, that's awesome advice. And, you know, the idea that the veterans are not going through through the, you know, the difficulties, the post-traumatic stress, alone, that they can find a lot of help, support from other veterans. And it may also help motivate them to realize that they may be helping other veterans by participating and supporting other veterans. So that's really important. Rick, before we go to our next segment of the show tonight, which is some news from Washington, any further thoughts on?
I'd like to comment on our last segment there. That is a wonderful example of honesty and admitting that you have a problem. You know, the first step in any recovery, whether it's PTS or alcoholism or drug addiction, any recovery is you need to admit that you have a problem, there's an issue there, and then let it go and go then let the process take care of itself and start getting the help you need. You know, people have to realize there's nothing wrong with someone having, you know, PTS or symptoms such as alcoholism or drug addiction as a result of PTS. You know, it's a disease of some sort. And, you know, veterans should be able to have that honesty and be able to say what they need to say in order to get the help they need. You know, if he had cancer, no one would ever say, don't talk about your cancer. So these are issues that need to be addressed. And that last segment is absolutely terrific. It was just a super example of honesty, transparency, and admitting that you have an issue. All right, David, back to you.
Well, thank you, Richard. All right, before we move to our second segment of the show, I just want to give out our toll-free call-in number in case any of our listeners want to call in. If you have any thoughts, insights, questions, comments, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. So give us a call. In our second segment of the show tonight, we have some news from Washington, D.C., courtesy of United States Senator Johnny Isakson of the state of Georgia, who also happens to be the chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. So he's a pretty powerful senator as far as veteran issues, because you know that legislation is going to have to pass through his committee, and he has a lot of control over what the agenda is. So recently, he issued a press release in which he highlighted what the Senate has done on veteran issues for the 115th Congress. The 115th Congress, as you know, every 2 years the House of Representatives, the entire House of Representatives, up for re-election. And since the beginning of the country, we're now in the 115th Congress for those two-year periods. The Senate is up for re-election, a third of the Senate every 2 years, because senators serve six-year terms, of the House, two-year terms. So we're in the 115th Congress, and Senator Isakson wanted to point out that since the 115th Congress started, which was January 3rd, 2017, so we're getting close to the two-year point, what the Congress has done. And he's particularly proud of the fact that on veteran issues, the Senate has acted in a pretty bipartisan way. We know how terribly dysfunctional it seems like Washington, D.C. is, and Congress is on so many issues that the country is very divided politically. But it seems like on veteran issues there's a lot of cooperation, which is interesting why that is. But okay, so the Senate's efforts, summarized by Senator Isakson, include the passage of 18 major pieces of veterans legislation, all of which have been signed into law. And the intent, the focus has been to strengthen veteran health care, also disability benefits and other services. The Senate has also confirmed 14 nominees to United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Now, Senator Eisenstein said, and I quote, "As chairman of the Senate Committee on Veteran Affairs, I take very seriously our responsibility to serve those who have served us. Our committee has worked to reform the VA and ensure that our veterans receive the care and benefits they deserve. We owe our veterans a VA that is responsive to them and their individual needs, and I'm proud to be part of such a bipartisan, productive committee. I look forward to continuing our efforts by working with Ranking Member Tester, members of the committee, and newly confirmed VA Secretary Robert Wilkie to oversee the implementation of these major reforms and transform the VA into a department worthy of our veterans," unquote. Now, the 18 major pieces of legislation that have been enacted into law since January 2017 have included, and I'll just highlight a few of them, you know, the Veterans Choice Program. The Choice Program has been the program that has allowed veterans to have, hopefully, more timely care in private, in other words, non-VA medical facilities. The Veterans Choice Program Improvement Act was signed into law in April of 2017. In August of that same year, Congress provided more funding for the Choice Program, and actually that continues to be a big issue, somewhat of a contentious issue now, where I think you are starting to see some political differences, which is to what extent should the VA pour more money into the Choice Program to allow veterans to seek medical care in the private sector versus the VA. There's a lot of contention over that issue because there's concerns by many veteran groups, not all, but I'd say most, that this is going to harm the VA. And the VA has a lot of unique resources and systems that are not easily duplicated in the private sector. So that's a big issue. Another important bit of legislation was the Veterans Affairs Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act, which was signed into law in June of 2017. The idea is to make the VA more accountable to veterans and protect the rights of whistleblowers. Whistleblowers, VA employees who basically bring problems or scandals to the public's attention, and if they don't have the protection of the law behind them, they're going to have every incentive not to be a whistleblower, and therefore these problems and scandals are more likely to remain hidden. So that was the purpose of that law. In August of 2017, so a little over a year ago, the Senate improved the GI Bill's education benefits, a very important law. It was called the Harry W. Colmery Veterans Education Assistance Act of 2017. Another one that Richard and I have talked about a lot over the last more than a year was a bit of legislation, very significant one for the veterans that use the disability compensation system, and it's called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. It was signed into law August 23rd, 2017, which significantly revamped the claim system and the appeal system at the VA, and there were many episodes that we've had on the Veterans News Hour over the last year in which we talked about that legislation, which ended up passing with pretty overwhelming margins by both the House of Representatives and the Senate, and then signed by the President. And we are now well into the implementation of that with the system called the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, which is kind of the trial system before the law is supposed to fully go into effect in February of 2019, which is rapidly approaching. Before I move on to some of these other significant laws, Richard, do you have any thoughts, anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, on the RAMP program, you know, today I was talking to one of the bros at the VA, and he has been against this program from day one.
Against it, you say?
Yes, against it. And of course, you know, his name will remain anonymous. But he says because it he doesn't think it's working. He was pointing out to me today that a lot of veterans have gotten into this program and not realizing all the technicalities of the program. And one of them being is that you can't file any new evidence once you opt into this program. You have to go with the evidence as is. And a lot of these veterans, you know, they want to, you know, provide additional nexus letters and things like that. And the DROs who are handling these cases, these RAMP cases, don't have to consider them, won't consider them. So it's a problem. And, you know, I think before a veteran gets into the program, when he gets his letter, he should reach out to an attorney, I'm going to say an attorney who knows what he's doing, who's analyzed the program, and he can analyze that veteran's case and then decide, based upon that veteran's fact issues, in his case, whether or not to opt into that program. Yes, it's going to be mandatory in February, but right now it is not. So, you know, there's still a window not to have to go into the program. So that's my advice to anyone who gets that letter. Don't just opt in on your own. Get some advice. It's a serious consideration to make and one that should not be taken lightly.
Thanks for sharing that insight, Richard. And I know that you and I, when this legislation was still working its way through Congress before the committee, you and I were really out there on the forefront talking about these very same concerns, which is with the new system, you're provided a number of choices. You file a supplemental claim if you don't like the initial decision. But then there's a concern, are you going to just be back on this hamster wheel of continuing trying to guess what the VA wants? Or you could choose the higher level review, which is kind of the similar, but not identical counterpart to what's now called the decision review officer or the DRO. But as you were just pointing out, Richard, if you opt into the higher level review lane, you can't submit any more evidence. So they're basically just looking what was already in the file, and you also don't get a hearing. So, and then the other lane being the appeal directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals with a couple lanes there. Do you want a hearing? Do you want to submit new evidence? Or you just want the BVA to decide based on what's already in the record? So veterans shouldn't make assumptions that rules that, you know, have existed for decades are still going to be the same, particularly the new evidence, the limitation on that, unless you're filing a new supplemental claim. So it is complicated. Congress seems also very confident that this was going to tremendously improve the system. I was very suspicious from the beginning because it seemed like these ideas were mainly coming from the VA bureaucracy itself with very little skeptical analysis by veteran groups. There were a few veteran groups that were strongly opposed, like the Vietnam Veterans of America and Military Veterans Advocacy Group and a few others, and us. But anyway, we'll have to see. And as you said, Richard, the law fully goes into effect in February 2019, which is rapidly approaching. And then veterans really won't have a choice. They won't be allowed to opt in. They'll have to follow the new procedures. And my prediction is we're going to see the Board of Veterans Appeals being inundated further with the large volume of cases. So we'll see how they're able to manage that as well as the cases that are already in the system. So those are some of the most important laws Congress over the last year and 8 months have passed. A number of other laws, some of them not receiving much media attention, some of them were more routine, like cost of living adjustment. These are important to veterans, but not headline, not, you know, front page newspaper stories. Like improving the cost of living adjustment, streamlining a process for veteran job training programs, the Veterans Apprenticeship and Labor Opportunity Reform Act, which was enacted last November 2017. Those are just some examples, some of these other laws. So, we'll see. I think the big issue still facing Congress will be to oversee the implementation of this appeals modernization program, which is very important, but also trying to tackle the issues of medical care. And meanwhile, as we mentioned on some recent shows, the VA has approximately 45,000 vacant positions, nearly all those in the health administration, for the, you know, medical side of the VA. And you know, what becomes of that issue obviously remains to be seen. So that's a wrap up of some of the key legislation so far in the 115th Congress. Now, Richard, I know we have a couple other topics. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show tonight. I'll leave it up to you which topics you want to talk about. If you want to talk about some of the projects we're working on, or offer your thoughts on Congress's performance on veteran issues, what would you like to see Congress do better, anything? What are your thoughts?
Well, David, I at this time would like you to talk about our special project regarding cost of war project, Stop War Today. Why don't you tell our listeners about that? It's a very exciting project that we're implementing. And
so. Yeah, motivated by some of the guests we've had on our show, as well as by our own personal experience and our own views and insights, Rich Hurley and I, along with film director Greg Lovett, and with support of other organizations and in collaboration with the Cost of War Project of Brown University, we're working on a major project. It's a multimedia program to inform the public, as well as government officials, by the way, about three major issues. That's the costs of war, human costs, social costs, financial costs, full spectrum of costs, but also the causes and effects and consequences of militarism, which is basically kind of a mindset, if you will, that that the United States needs to be very aggressive in projecting its military power around the country, to the extent we almost have a military empire, or we do, around the globe, and it's been that way and growing since World War II. But also, we want to talk about really a third issue, which is extremely important, and that's where we're leading to, which is the importance, the practicality, and the possibilities of peace building, which is trying a paradigm shift. We're trying to get people to start thinking that you know, we can have a much more peaceful world. We're not naive. We realize you can't snap your fingers and war is going to go away. I mean, war has been with humanity for as long as there have been people on the planet, but it certainly is possible to prevent at least some wars and minimize the harmful effects of those wars when they do occur, and that includes finding ways to prevent war, but when wars break out, to end those as quickly as possible, with the idea of how can we improve the relationships between these parties so that they can live, coexist at least, if not become allies. And there's a classic example of success in that area was after we were in a world war with Japan and Germany, and we defeated them. It was horrendous war, horrendous. And yet, after the war, through very concerted plans and efforts and hard work, both of those countries became the allies of the United States, friends, not just a matter of coexisting with them, but our friends. And those countries were basically kind of reborn, and it was with the idea that we wanted more of a permanent peace, and in any event, things got complicated, Cold War with the Soviet Union, etc. But the idea is we've got this project, and we want to help shape and influence public thought on this. So we've got this multimedia project we're working on. It'll be publicized by a nonprofit organization called Image Essays, which was started by Greg Lovett and some others. You can check out their website, which is imageessays.org. Image is I-M-A-G-E, essays, E-S-S-A-Y-S, imageessays.org. And it's very important. This is a nonprofit organization, nonprofit project, where we will produce an ongoing series of mini-documentaries, about 15 minutes each episode, to explain and analyze, again, the cost of war, the concept of militarism, the effects of that, but also peace building, those three major themes. And if you care to make a donation to support this very important work, go to the website of imageessays.org. Again, imageessays.org. But we're going to be working in collaboration with experts in these areas that make it their professional work to study war, militarism, and peace building. And many of those experts already work with the Cost of War Project, sponsored by Brown University. We'll be working closely with them, but also experts from other organizations and individuals from other organizations, such as the National Priorities Project and War Prevention Initiative and others. And hopefully we'll get the cooperation of the United States Institute of Peace, which was created by legislation by Congress in 1984. It operates by Washington standards on a pretty meager budget, which we think is really a symptom of the problem, which is, you know, the U.S. Institute of Peace is functioning on a $38 million a year budget, Department of Defense on a $717 billion annual budget. So anyway, it'll be an exciting project. We're jumping into it with the idea that we want to help inform the public and get a conversation going. So we'll see.
Let me add there that this is not a left-right issue. This is an issue that affects all Americans, no matter what your political persuasion might be. And, you know, David and I are, we've been partners now for over 6 years, and by our own admissions, I'm the left of the Corey and Hurley, and he's the right to the Corey and Hurley, yet we come together and are trying to promote this project, because we both know that this is something that would benefit our children and our grandchildren in the future of this country, because, as David said, the paradigm has to change. When there's a conflict out there, you can't ratchet up and send out the jets. You got to think about sitting down and figuring out what might be the alternative peaceful solutions in lieu of a ratcheting up and doing a military exercise. So hope people will go to our website, check us out, follow us on the show, because we'll be talking about it. I also want to thank Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, because they have donated today. They donated to our project, Stop War Today, and really appreciate their support, not only for the show, but now for our project. And, you know, Joe is a 90-year-old who was a World War II veteran, he stepped right up and agreed that this is a worthwhile venture to endorse and donate to. So thanks again, Joe and Joyce. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you. Before we're about down to our last 2 minutes, quick websites again for the nonprofit organization, which is working with us in this project. It's imageessays.org, imageessays.org. And the main website for the overall project, which is beyond just the films we're talking about, is stopwar.today. Not .com or .org or anything like that. It's stopwar.today. And it's also on Facebook. If you go to the Facebook search engine and type in Stop War Today, you'll find it. So we're about ready to run out of time. Richard, if you want to remind us about the Coaching and the Care program, and then that'll be it for tonight.
Absolutely, especially in light of the segments we had tonight. These programs are definitely worthwhile mentioning again, which we do every show. It is our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about these VA programs called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having a difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Now back to you, David.
Well, it's time for us to go. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Please stay tuned next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.